This is Living Clean and Sober on City of Angels Recovery Radio. Tonight's show is all about staying sober in college. The College of New Jersey, TCNJ, has just opened a sober home for students. They're one of just three collegiate sober living programs in the state of New Jersey. Chris Freeman and Joe Hadge from TCNJ are in the station, talking with show hosts Johnny and Ken about the college's new sober home and how it can help TCNJ students with addiction issues maintain their recovery.
Being on college can be a really trying environment for students that are in recovery, and we want to help them be successful.
Right. How do you support them, Chris?
One of the things, so our program has multiple components to it. Okay. And probably one of the most exciting components to it is housing for students that are in recovery. We call it Lion's House. And students that are in recovery can live together. They can create a community together. They can support one another. They can grow together. We describe Lion's House as a place that's dedicated to sobriety, personal growth, and academics. And I think that's a really prime way to support students that are in recovery. We also offer them counseling. I'm a licensed professional counselor and licensed clinical alcohol and drug counselor. And they can come and they can talk about their experience and work through whatever challenges they're having on campus. We also offer a program called Recreate Your Night, which is a late night activities program. So when other college students might be going to parties and a student in recovery might be saying to themselves, you know, at that party, you know, I'm really bored here. That party looks really tempting. We want to give them something else to do. Hmm. So those are kind of the main components. But one of the advantages of being at TCNJ is it's a smaller campus. And you're not going to get lost at TCNJ. And being that there is dedicated staff for this program, we're there to support them. And if one of the things that I mentioned doesn't quite cover their needs, we're going to look to find ways to help them out.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I noticed that on your website, how you were actually structuring activities with alcohol not being involved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Which that was one of your lines, which I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. Because, you know, let's face it, you know, I didn't go to college, but, you know, I still went to my life was a party, actually, after I got out of high school. I said, Mom, I know I got scholarships, but I'd rather stay down the shore and sell drugs and be a playboy. And that's exactly what I did. And 4 years later, it took everything away from me. It promised me everything and took it all away, just like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I just thought it was interesting that you offer that as an option. Because people need to feel secure. I mean, let's face it. You know, I can't get clean by myself. I don't really know anybody else that's been able to do that successfully. You know, happy and, you know, full of life, that kind of stuff. I mean, my grandfather stopped drinking because if he continued to drink, it would have killed him. But he wasn't happy. He was sort of like, you know, existing. You know, and this recovery thing that we're doing, and I think, I'm hoping it's the same thing that you guys are offering is, you know, you covered three things, you know, some structure. You know, self-improvement's pretty big, actually. You know, I didn't think I had a problem. I don't know about you, Johnny, but, you know, so if we don't think we have a problem, what is there to improve? There's nothing to improve, you know, so you kind of offering that out there for people to kind of recognize that, hey, you know what, if you want to improve your life, there are some things that we can do here, which is beneficial, so... what do you have that?
So I think about my shore experience too. Moved from Massachusetts to right outside of Seaside Heights, New Jersey. And
wow.
Boardwalk. Culture shock.
So my little, you know, shy town in Massachusetts to the boardwalk kind of exposed me to a lot in college athletics and fraternity and sorority life, seeing what that was like, kind of exposed me. So some of the programming that my part of the area does is to help students recognize how they might have a problem. So we have tools, which one I think is great. It's called eCheckup to Go. They used to call it eChug, but they've changed the name to eCheckup to Go. And basically it's a informal screening that's done with technology through a computer that allows students to look at what they're doing in a fun way. So based on notable tools that are embedded in this, or a notable tool is, and that's what we try and help students to get to recognize what they're doing. So sometimes it equates their alcohol into cheeseburgers. So that's calories for some. That's important, you know, how they look and appeal, which sometimes impacts 18 to 19-year-olds. Sure. Not all of them. Most of the students, I can say, probably don't have an addiction, but are impacting their lives negatively by heavy use, by misuse, and at times abuse. And they very well may be on the stages to addiction. So another effort that we've done for many years is that every incoming first-year student will do another online tool where they see videos, we see other students, they interact, and they get kind of get to see the signs and symptoms of what it means to be a college and a lifestyle and how to make choices. So every student gets to do that. Whereas early days in the field, when I was a SAC and Tom Zerber, a student assistance counselor, we used to say, if you help one, you've done your job. And I still believe that, the old starfish story.
Sure.
And I support that. But what we've tried to go to a more advanced or where we can reach many at once. And with technology, we have. And so this one online-based tool that we use, and there's several out there, reaches all of them. And I know if they've done it, how far they've done it, and there's either even a pre- and post-test. So it's a mixed review from students, but we know we've done the right thing. Just like we can tell us and share some people, here's what's going on. We can see your road. They got to make some choices.
Right.
So there's many early stages. And the great thing is that the state has helped us with Chris's position on starting collegiate recovery. So that's in addition to what I've been doing, which is great. Because okay. Sometimes it takes more time to work with somebody that's deep in experience having use or misuse. So that's where we've kind of come together. And I have what we call the early end or the prevention education end. Chris has more of the recovery end.
So is there a separation, like collegiate recovery from recovery in other fellowships, or is there some kind of
work right down the hall from each other, so you know we okay. can just poke our head out the door and yell down, hey Joe, what time was the radio show tonight? And you know, we're right down the hall and we work together. And so, you know, kind of our theme is supporting students in recovery and preventing substance abuse. That's kind of our approach that we take, and we really want to work together because it is a continuum, right? So,
could you elaborate on that preventing?
Yeah. So, when you think about substance use disorder or substance use in general, you can think everybody fits on this continuum, right? On one end of the continuum is somebody who doesn't use at all. On the other end of the continuum is somebody uses to the point where they die, causes their death. And you kind of have this dividing line down the middle, which is, divides the non-problematic from the problematic. And, In college, about 20% of students, 20 to 30% of students, abuse alcohol or can meet the clinical criteria for alcohol abuse disorder. Right, out of that 20%, 20 to 30%, a lot of students actually outgrow it. Right, but some don't outgrow it, and some go on to developing an addiction.
Outgrow physically. Mentally, or I mean, what do you mean by outgrowing
it? Yeah, so it gets a little bit complicated. So bear with it here, right?
We like complicated.
So when we talk about a substance use disorder,
if you don't, we will.
When we talk about a substance use disorder, what we're talking about is a disorder that's brought about by psychological, social, and biological factors. Right, and by the time we're reaching what we commonly refer to as an addiction, there's a lot more of the biological factors that take over. That's what we refer to it as a disease. Right, there's mm-hmm. the compulsiveness to it. There's the cravings to it.
Do you
right?
believe it's a disease?
Yes, I do. Yeah, we often talk about it hijacking the brain. Right. But in between that, we have all these points along the way. We have a mild use disorder, we have a moderate, and then we have severe. Moderate to severe is what we often consider an addiction. And so what we want to do is we want to help students and prevent them before it becomes an addiction. So that's kind of what we mean when we talk about the continuum. So obviously, if you never start, you're never going to develop a problem, regardless of whether you have predisposing factors.
So let me ask you something that you just said.
Sure.
The criteria for that is what? Like, in other words, if someone's using, and so let's say, because in my experience, I started out young, mm-hmm. and there was never any, back then, there was no kind of, they didn't really categorize it as a disease as much as they do today. And by that I mean, there was no, okay, addiction is a disease, you know, it will kill you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it was a phase.
Yeah. So,
or it was a moral failing.
Right. So what I'm kind of confused on what you said about different levels of addiction. That I've never heard that before.
So, yeah, and let me clarify, and I think some of the language is, you have to be specific with the language. So what we talk about is we talk about a substance use disorder, right? So not all substance use disorders are an addiction, right? Sometimes we refer to it as substance abuse versus addiction. Does that language maybe ring a bell, sound a little bit more familiar? So what happens is some people may abuse a substance, but they may not necessarily be addicted to it.
Well, that's where it's kind of, I don't know, it gets...
Well, I mean, I understand what Chris is saying. I mean, it happened with my brother. You know, he always wondered for years, like, how I could risk the potential of not only losing my life, but losing everything over the drug. And he tried heroin. And he said, you know what? I understand. You know, he did it in Malaysia. I'll never forget the conversation. He said, you know what? It was the greatest feeling in the world. But I would never want to lose everything I've built to continue to do that. And that was the difference that I saw.
Precisely.
I don't care, actually. When the monkey is awake, I'm done. I'm gone. I'm off and running forever. It takes... I don't know. What did it take for me to stop, John? I mean, like, you know, I was like welcoming death. I was vividly thinking of God. When are you just going to take my life? I can't do this anymore. The drugs aren't working. I have nowhere to go. I'm totally done. And then, boom, I saw a sign and I went with it, which I believe was an awakening for me.
I think that's in many ways a good illustration of the difference between abuse and dependence, right? Okay. There are some people who can use it and they can eventually just kind of walk away with it. But there are some people who latches on and they can't. And that's because there's both biological adaptations in the brain. And that's why we call it a disease.
So do you think, and this is, I guess, where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
I don't know many people that have done that, like Ken's brother.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I guess, the stance that I'm coming from. Like, when someone presents for treatment clinically, there's a diagnosis, of course. Mm-hmm. And it'll either be polysubstance abuse but by the time they get to that point, they have the diagnosis, whether it was labeled by laymen or clinicians, what their diagnosis is. And that's, I guess, where I'm kind of confused about that, because when I went to a meeting my first time, it was like I said, there was none of this stuff that we talk about today. Mm-hmm. It was 1986. Right. So really people didn't say, oh, you have a disease and, you know, the AMA says this, and they didn't really have an opinion on it at that time. But if you showed up at a meeting, then chances are you were an addict. There wasn't any thing to argue that point.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word.
And you know, we sometimes can do mental gymnastics, right? And I don't want what I'm saying.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
To kind of say, oh, well, maybe I fit in that category where it's more abuse, right?
happened to me.
Yeah. So I don't want that to get twisted. You know, I think that was more in context of the prevention part, right? That we have this huge amount of people, 20% of college students who have a substance use disorder, about 6% of them have an addiction, right? So we have this big umbrella, and we want to prevent those in that 20% category from going on to that addiction or dependence. So yeah, I don't want to get it twisted and kind of give people room to go back, you know, deny what's really going on.
Right, because that one of the biggest symptoms is denial.
Yeah.
So, you know, in my head, it was telling me, well, you know, there you go. But, you know, in my travels along trying to find the answer to this nonsense, because I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know why I had these urges where I couldn't stop no matter what was going on in my life, good, bad, or indifferent. it never really entered my mind. I mean, essentially homeless and thinking about, not thinking about where I was going to sleep that night, but where am I getting the next one? So that that really, so I was just, and I don't want to split hairs. I don't want to debate you because you're the counselor and I'm, you know, I'm not. It's like, remember, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not.
No, well, no. But, I mean, it's interesting. It's like what I'm gathering you saying, Chris, is that you're offering some tools and some resources in the possibility of prevention through some sort of education, so that maybe if you're still an addict, you don't have to lose everything you got, destroy your family, hurt your mother, break your wife's heart.
Yeah.
There can be some things that you can do to maybe prevent that from happening. But at the end of the day, once you're an addict, you're always an addict. But maybe you won't go to a level.
And the neat part of our jobs are that some of the tools that we have out there, you know, a couple that I shared, and just having a person to talk to early
Absolutely.
So maybe early on in some of our lives, somebody sat down in a nice way and said, let's look at your past. Let's talk, you know, honestly if you can. And, you know, sometimes people can go, maybe I need to make some changes. And this could be way before they have an addiction. You can look at an athlete that goes out and creates problems for themselves. I don't know if because they did it once, you know, that they have an addiction, but if it's going to interfere with a career and a love and a wealthy field and you're going to continue, that probably starts to tell us in the field that you may have an addiction if you put a value over a substance, over a specialty hobby and lifelong paying thing. So some of our activities are just raising awareness. One of the programs we do is we train students to recognize signs and symptoms. As simple as that night, how intoxicated is somebody? We actually, you know, I actually teach students how to size somebody up. If that's a first-year student, and depending on their gender, depending on what they're drinking, you should know what's going on with them, especially if you're hosting. I see I kind of got a look there for a second, but different body mechanics. You know, a larger male can handle more alcohol than a smaller male, and at two average size male and females, and that's what I was referring to.
I was going to say, because tolerance. What about tolerance?
So tolerance is my favorite.
Shoot a 300-pound man. Yeah,
right.
But
so
tolerance.
here's my one of my favorite activities, and I don't know how well this great works, but I'm planning it again. I'm going to have a couple of hundred students, three sessions each. But I'm going to ask them, if you ask the average student or anybody, what is tolerance? Their answer is the ability to drink a lot. Am I wrong? You know, it's the ability. It's like a achievement. Am I wrong?
Well,
tolerance is a good thing. It's a project.
I was a weekend warrior. So weekends were, you know, 2 days. So I drank as much as I could Friday night, Saturday night.
And what did some people say about this? This is how I talk to the students. What do we do for that young person that has that high tolerance? How do we treat them? In the movies, in the TV shows, in the college movies, that person that can drink the most, what do we call them? Frank the Tank? Champ?
I hear
it. It's kind of looked like up on.
It's
like
a good
kind of admired
thing.
Hey, he can take
so back to
X
the
amount.
Right. It's very admired sometimes, and some, of course, are frowning. So we want to build that people.
Yeah.
Those people that say, "What?" You know, that do look at that and go, "That ain't cool." So literally, I try and get them through conversation. Sometimes they say, "If the doctor gave
That's
me medication for these two pills for painkillers, and they said this two at this level is what you should take each day, and 4 days later I'm doubled it, and the next week I quadrupled it," most everybody would go, "That's messed up." Right?
Yeah.
And college students generally can think these things through. So I ask them, you know, what does it mean? Or this is the other way we approach things, which is different than 30 years ago. I ask them, who's paying for that drinker? Whose money is that coming out of? Because it costs them more money. It's kind of not the most fun way to look at it. You know, for some of them, they care about money. So if it costs you more money, then the other one is more calories. It's a warning sign for all of us, right? Tolerance. That's what I try to get to them through conversation. That they can see it and that they can say, you know, Stevie over here, that actually has been going on for a year. And that's where he comes to life every, you know, at the event when he's the tank. That probably, if he's really our brother or teammate or classmate or floor mate, right? So that's what we're trying to do. That's one of the quote unquote prevention. Hard to measure, but by engaging them earlier on.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
maybe if people engaged us early on instead of shunned us, turned away, didn't know.
I see where you're going with it. I mean, it's, you know, the obsession and the compulsion of the disease. So if it's easier to see it in somebody else. Hey, man, you're obsessed. You know, you woke up at 7:30 and...
It was like I spent 15 years on the road with a band. You know what I mean? We were in bars. It was in our faces. I mean, there was cocaine.
It was the lifestyle.
I mean, it was there. You know what I mean? At one point in time, after I started having my first child, and you know what I mean? You go, hey, I have to become responsible. And some of us can just shut that switch off and move on. And some of us can't. You know what I mean? And that's where you really get into the next.
Well, that's the thing.
That's where it's a disease. Right.
That's what I was going to say. And we use addiction.
Exactly. And that's where we talk about, you know, it hijacks the brain when it's no longer rational. Right. And that's why it's a disease. You know, when somebody can be losing so many things over here, yet that doesn't matter to them. Only getting the drug
so
does.
You're behind the bar at 9:00 in the morning, that's not a red flag. You got a problem.
And that's why it was interesting for me to grow up, you know, and finish high school outside of Seaside in my first few years of college, because I would see some of that. The lying. Like, if you went out drinking with a group of guys and then they had one of them had to sneak around and get shots at another bar, that's pretty weird to me. So I would sometimes confront them the next day. Like, that's really weird.
What's challenging on the college environment is a lot of that behavior is considered typical college behavior. And so very often addictions or dependence can kind of hide because we think, well, I'm in college and, you know, college students drink too much. And at the same time, when it goes back to supporting students that are in recovery, I think that type of thinking can make it so easy to kind of backslide in how you identify and understand.
Well, you almost become
what's going on.
Functional at that point, right? No matter what state you're in.
Yeah, but yeah, Chris, don't you think that a lot of those things start happening before you actually get to college? Mm. I mean, isn't there a conditioning that's going on, you know, maybe in the house or whatever? Yeah. You know, no parental guidance, both families work, my kids get old enough to take care of themselves. That's how I grew up.
From my experience, from worked at a couple of colleges and been around, I think it's a spectrum. It's so hard. Our field is so hard. I have some students, or I hear about some students from other colleges, never really drank. And, you know, based on some of our theories is that the later you drink, the much better it is. If you start drinking at 19 or 20, it's much better than 15 or 16. We would call that high risk, doing it at 15. But I have some people that start later that, for whatever... Well, the classic is when they say to me, when they feel comfortable, say, I really like that. And so I just ask them, you really, meaning that drink, that type of drink. Especially if you're young and you're 18 and you really like bourbon. I just rephrase it back to them. Here's what I saw. That's kind of a tell a little bit.
Well,
it doesn't mean you're going to be an alcoholic, but we need to look at it. But if we put ourselves into an environment where everybody's drinking and smoking every night, and you really are impassioned by that feel that you get from it. But it may come back to what they weren't managing or dealing with well earlier in their life.
And to go back to your question, Ken, you know, I bring that up about how easy it is to backslide into that way of thinking, whether it started before college or after college, because I think that speaks to how challenging an environment college can be and how many temptations and triggers there might be. And that's why we want to be there to really support them so that if that thought process does pop up, you know, if they're in a counseling session, we can talk about it, or their housemates can call them on that, because we want to really prevent them from going back.
And
did you
know, would like
trigger.
Who used trigger? You did?
Trigger.
It's a horse, right?
No,
is there something about the word? Tell me.
Well, no, I was just thinking because if, you know, you said, you know, something about triggers, but if they don't know that it is a trigger because they're coming into college, it's labeled as a trigger, but they have no experience. Like, I know what a trigger is today, but it's taken me 40 years to understand that.
Well, I was going to say, isn't that part of recovery, identifying what our triggers are?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But I'm just thinking the way you used it in that sentence, I kind of thought that they didn't know coming into it that it could be a trigger.
Yeah. Some might not.
You're doing that through your educational program, I see.
So that, you know, that's one of the things we all, I mean, anybody in our field looks at what is their trigger. We call it also the stages of change. I mean, one of the early stages is, that they just I just lost my word.
Pre-contemplation.
Pre-contemplation.
You don't even think it's a problem.
You don't even
Someone
think
comes it. To you and then they say, I think you're drinking too much. They're going to get angry.
Yeah.
And we call it denial.
Yeah, denial. Yeah.
So abstinence. Yes.
But, you know, saying it's a stage of change is more optimistic, right? So they're in a stage of change. They're just, you know, pre-contemplation.
And so with some of this language of stages of change, we also use this term in the last 5-6 years, motivational interviewing. And when I first knew about the field, I was fortunate when I was very young to, it wasn't the Betty Ford Clinic, but for New England in the 1970s, it was the Betty Ford Clinic, and I spent a lot of time there with my mother. I saw some very famous people that were on TV, one of the most famous comedians on TV, and I listened to them talk, so I kind of got a feel what was going on. Some of it was, you know, how do they deal with stress, how do they deal with life, but to recognize things earlier on and to you know, identify some things. So what we try to do in this motivational interviewing is just nicely rephrase back what they say. I don't really have a problem, even though I yelled at the cop, but I don't really remember the last night. My girlfriend really got mad at me, but I don't drink a lot, you know, and so they say all that. So without throwing it back at them, which I felt I saw in the early days where it was more combative and confrontive, saying you do have a problem.
It used to be referred to as breaking through the denial.
Yeah, breaking through. Whereas I go, okay, so you don't have a problem. Can we just look at a couple of other words that you said? Can you remember? What do you mean, that I don't remember? Where I got in front? Yeah, can we just talk about that? So it takes a lot more patience. I don't want to. I want to say, don't you hear yourself, you knucklehead? Like, this is the fourth time you're here. No. And this is more in general clients that you're working with.
No, I hear your form associations. I mean, I get it. Things that they do and things that happened and this could happen or
but
if you don't do something about it now.
That's coming into college for the first time. Like, hey, man, it's party time. Like, that stigma, like, that carries the stigma in. Right?
So that's the other piece that
yeah.
we work
on. Well, and that talks to, they come in and they say, you know, hey, it's party time. And so if somebody has the right configurations of risk factors, including genetics, and they come in with the attitude of it's party time, they are very likely to just fly along that continuum and reach a point where it's beyond abuse and dependence really quickly. And so that's what we want to do. We want to help prevent those students from getting to that point. However, if they do get to that point, we also want to help them.
Now, do you find where they come in, you know what I mean, and they start as a freshman and, you know, they fall into the party mode and they're just overwhelmed, their grades fail. I mean, they're just, it's just downhill all the way.
So we, you know, because this has been going on, this is just at any college, all colleges work together. I worked with a bunch of the colleges in New Jersey, but so we do practices and we actually have different things to try and catch them early, whether it's their grades dipping or an advisor talking to them. But that's what we try and identify before it's too late.
Before it becomes a problem.
But it's tough. You know, you have some people that you do all these nice things we just talked about.
Yeah, they're functional addicts. You know? I mean, you really wouldn't know.
And so we have different stages. And for me, it's great to have another step and stage, and you know, where somebody else can do that. But that's our role. We try and catch those people along the way. And some, it has to get worse, right? Some, it doesn't. You know.
And I think for most that end up being in recovery, it has to get that way. You know, it's unfortunate. And along the way, we die. A lot of us,
yeah.
A lot of our young people are dying. And it's this heroin where, Joe, you were talking about it earlier, an athlete gets their knee busted up.
Yeah.
They get narcotics, they get perks or whatever it might be. They start to take them, but if they don't have that internal sickness, they can take the prescription as prescribed, because I'll tell you, my experience, I don't think I ever took a narcotic pain medicine as prescribed. Now, that's just me.
So
that's how
every
I.
Every 4 hours, it's four every one.
Four every, yeah.
It's backwards.
Yeah. Six every 4. But my point is, that's like, and we used to talk about triggers and cognitive behavioral therapy and all that stuff. And what happens is this thing is internal and no one knows, especially the person that's living it, what's going on.
So when I hear that kind of, I think of biochemical. That's why we have the disease concept, because if the craving is there, I think it's going to be clearer. You know, and I have watched the fancy reports from NIDA and Nora Volkov, where it talks brain studies, and there's something there. And I think someday, what I told students years ago, I said, in 5 years, we're going to be able to do a brain scan, and we're going to be able to say to this person, based on your levels of chemicals in your brain and your body, you're high risk if you start doing this or this.
I saw that on CNN the other night.
You know, it's getting closer. It's not quite there, but it's there, and we have other colleagues that are very much into this. Right. Our job is to try to read through their history or their actions and their comments to say, are they in that category?
Yeah.
And what will help them deal with this before?
And, you know, the toughest ones, I would imagine, are the ones who have no predisposition to being an addict. You know, come in, no family history, blah, blah, blah. And I've seen, I mean, I have a lot of people in recovery that I hang out with now. Mm-hmm. Like, healthy families growing up, you know, college. I went to Temple University, but I wish you guys were around then, because I quit. I quit because I couldn't maintain an active addiction. And the grades were easy. I mean, I had a 3.8 GPA, but I never showed up because I was busy copping or getting high or doing something. So, you know, and my parents, like, I always wanted to be a doctor and all that, so I settled for writing prescriptions rather than without the degree. And I joke about that, but my parents went nuts to get me into college and, you know, all that, and I just wasted it away. And today what I'm seeing is based on what all of us went through. Like, I'm talking about people in our age, already myself, Kenny, is that, you know, these young kids are, you know, however it's going on, one of the biggest problems is the stigma. And the families refuse to ask for help because it's shameful. What I mean?
So I definitely think that's partly going on. I wanted to add, based on some of the scenario, your scenario that you talked about, one of the things most of the college did about 10, 12 years ago, we were one of the first, is that we send a letter home to students, to the parents. After, and even though there's FERPA and there's rights, but we kind of send a home letter, say, just so you know, your student was involved in a situation, you may want to have a conversation with them. Now, a lot of people thought that was really, well, how can you do that? They're 18. Well, because sometimes they may be out of school before the next step, and the parent goes, what happened? Right. So we found a way that we do that. Was it today? I had a student today. But what basically, when that parent has that conversation and talks about their own family history or uncle or brother or father, you know, hopefully that might just adjust their behavior earlier on before it's late. As far as stigma, I think that still is an age-old challenge that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I also can ask you guys, my challenge that we face at colleges, and those of us that drank, we used to drink beer and maybe a mixed drink. Young people today drink vodka to start. Of the drinkers, and not of all the drinkers. So they're starting heavy and hard, and I just literally say to them, are you ever going to be lighter as 18 years old? And how much experience do you have? Do you know any adults that drink vodka straight? You know, usually they don't, you know.
Right.
But they start the night with 3 or 4 shots.
I mean, if you want to be specific. They're looking to get out of reality quickly.
Right. And so that's kind of what I ask them in different words. Like, what do you look? And some are going with the flow. Some are doing it because TV, I think. And some are doing it because the person. And just sometimes them identifying that will help. But that's one of the concrete changes I've seen, whereas at the end of the night or during the middle of the night, you might have had a shot or something like that 20, 30 years ago. But they're starting hard and struck marijuana. Is it the same? No. I watched one of my friends this week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago on 60 Minutes with Willie Nelson having a big fat joint. And I was fascinated just on how some people can handle that and some don't. But I can tell you, listening to people that smoked marijuana 30 years ago and the people that smoke it now, it's incredibly different.
Mm. Yes, it is. You're right.
You know, and so,
absolutely right.
You know, it's not the same.
The level of THC back in a joint in 1970s
it's almost scary too, because you have all the synthetic drugs that are on the market now, and you never really know
exactly
what
you,
it is.
You know what I mean? There's no quality control in there.
Yeah. Even with even with marijuana, I mean, you know, back then it was 6 to 8% of THC in a joint, an average joint.
Now
today it's 20-40%. So this brain damage that they suspect goes on from marijuana usage is threefold.
And what's the long-term effect of that?
Yeah, we don't know. You know, we have a lot of different research going on, but
and what they're doing
I'm
is legalizing.
Long term effect isn't good.
No,
that's my guess.
That is a brilliant guess, sir.
Look, I went from pot to beer to heroin, and then that was the end of the story.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Well, we've reached the top of the hour. Sorry, Ken. Got to pay our tribute.
Hold on.
I don't know. Artie was directing me. Artie's our, he tells
Stace,
me.
Stace, what do you got to say? I mean, pitch in. Let's
Let me do my thing and then.
Yeah, go for it. That's why I'm going to go, Phil.
Thanks.
Because I have a lot, actually, go ahead.
Go ahead. We'll wait.
No,
we'll wait.
Hours, so
all right. Okay. You give me trouble all the time. I love you, Art. www.coaradio.com to listen. 609-241-7103 is to call in and ask our great guest tonight some questions, or if you have any comments, feel free to give us a call. Also, if you go to our website, www.cityofangelsnj.org, you'll see the amazing things that we do here. Family groups, interventions, treatment, recovery house, placings, all that kind of stuff. So go to our website and check it out. And we're back. Hi, Stace.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Stacey.
Now, first off, I commend, let me start this off nicely. And it will be nicely. What you guys do and appreciate what you guys do, because college is where my downfall was. And it wasn't necessarily the school or what it was. It was my, I think, addictive personality. But again, with your stigma as, I think as a freshman looking at, like, with the vodka being the first thing, I think it's a matter of, like, being cool and keeping up. You know, this generation, I'm sorry, is just, we're a little more hardcore with our drugs. Drugs have, you know, we have technology and stuff is updated, you know, so yes, our pot is stronger.
Accessibility.
Our first drink is vodka, you know, and that happened to be a part of my story. It was not an easing into something. It was, you know, well, it was the pot, the drinking, and then the heroin, but... But I think what you guys are doing great, because you're planting a mustard seed. Whether you reach all of them, you're at least getting into their heads that, because with a mustard seed, it's deep down. Or they'll think about it more, and you're offering something that I know that my college didn't, my sister's college didn't. Something at least like, but one thing you have programs that you follow. Now, do you offer that, like, and I can't even say it, can I? Anyway, you can't say that.
Can't say
a program. Do you like? Do they have steps? Do they have? Do you guys have local meetings for these kids?
They have peer groups, I'm sure.
We have a TCNJ clinic, is community based actually, that will help people in the county and the area. But there also is Smart Recovery. Chris is working on an AA meeting. When we had an AA meeting at the college, mostly students didn't go. It was outsiders. We're still trying to build this base. We're talking about this, and we get it. A lot of our 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds don't get it. And for some of them, I still think it's up in the air where they're at. They're making some more choices. Is it addiction? I'm not always sure. But I'll let Chris expand. So, yeah. But we do have Smart Recovery at TCNJ on the campus.
What does SMART stand for? Smart? Like intelligent?
Just smart.
You know, it's funny. It does stand for something. I just don't remember what it is.
Yeah, like each initial. I mean.
I think it does. Self-management and recovery. You know, we have Google. We should Google this.
Yeah. Why don't we Google that?
Well, my wife has all the answers, so I don't need
Well, she's not here.
So going back to
what wife?
Programs we offer. Oh. So going back to Lions House, right? So if a student's in recovery.
We
have Lions House, right? And so what I think the vision is, this is a community, right? And that people are sharing their struggles with one another, being able to openly talk about what they're going through instead of being shut off in a dorm and feeling isolated.
Right. Right.
There's somebody right next to them where they say, you know, I had a really bad day and, you know, this is what's going on and this is what I'm thinking. Let's just talk this out. So there's just this sense of community and relationships. But also there's a sense of fun.
Absolutely.
You know, in our brochure, we write an essential part of recovery is fun. And
absolutely.
That's kind of the idea behind Recreate Your Night, where, you know, people are just getting out there and they're enjoying life and they're learning that they don't need to have substances to enjoy life, and they can live this awesome, amazing life and live it with a clear mind. And so those are some of the things that we are really envisioning for our students. Going back to other programs, you know, we realize that recovery is a lifelong process and that we want students to be equipped to manage their recovery even outside of Lions House, outside of that. And so we have some expectations for students that live in the recovery house. And all these expectations are aimed at enhancing recovery. And one of those is to be involved in a self-help meeting, right? There's multiple paths to recovery. So AA, NA are amazing and great, and they help a ton of people. Not everybody connects with AA or NA, and that's where we were talking about Smart Recovery, which we do have on campus. We have an AA meeting across the street from our campus within walking distance. And one of the things that we, once we get kind of a robust group and something that can kind of support itself, we hope to be able to bring an AA or even NA meeting on campus if that's what's appropriate.
So gotcha. Smart Recovery is self-management and recovery training.
So it would be like recovery coaching stuff and all that. That
well,
would
actually,
be part
it's,
of that,
it's
right?
more self-management. I mean, it's not going. There's no 12-step meeting. There's no.
No, it, well, that's.
It's a little more action oriented. It's address an issue and improve. It's based on, if I recall right, Albert Ellis, and this was a kind of directive approach where people kind of come in, address what's going on, and move on. So it's kind of interesting because, you know, having seen so much AA in the family and the NIT, going to a meeting early and going afterwards, I've never noticed with Smart Recovery people that I've ever met, they do that as much.
But, you know, as a recovery coach, you know, when somebody says they're in recovery, they're in recovery. You know what I mean? It's not my job as a recovery coach to talk them into that. So
that's why the fellowship's
have traditions.
If they
say they're in Smart Recovery and that's their recovery program,
yeah,
you know, we have to support that. You
right,
know,
exactly.
You know what I mean, as far as that.
Chris, I just wanted to back up a minute. So you said something like recovery is a lifelong process. How's that perceived when you put that out to the people that you're dealing with? How do they look at that?
It all depends on what stage, where they are in the stage of change, right? So if they are, if they're in pre-contemplation, you know, you're not even mentioning, so that you know, they have a
problem.
Do they
tell you?
Do they tell you what?
That I've been sentenced. is this a sentence, like lifelong process?
Oh, well, yeah.
I won't get cured from this disease. It'll become arrested.
So when they're in the contemplation, even the action stage of change, that's something that they're wrestling with.
Okay.
You know, I've had clients come in one day and they say, you know, I'm an alcoholic and I need to go to meetings. I'm doing 90 and 90 days. And, you know, this is path for me. And then could be a day later, could be a week, could be months later, they come in and they say, well, I think maybe I can, you know, I think it was just abuse, or I think I can drink in moderation, right? And so there's that wrestling with what exactly is this that I'm experiencing.
And Chris and I had this conversation, you know, while we were waiting for everybody. How do you tell a 20, 21-year-old you can't party for the rest of your life? How do you
right.
do that? What are they going to tell you?
You won't miss that.
You're off. They shut you right off.
So based on that, what you just said, because sometimes I forget a lot, so I'm right on in what I wanted to ask you. Okay, now how about all this other stuff that we have now? We never had, which Joe, we talked about that earlier. We didn't have it back then, like PTSD, ADHD, all that. All them letters I was in the field for a long time with developmentally disabled folks, and I studied behavior, which, you know, human behavior. And, you know, that kind of stuff. See, somehow they connected addiction to that, which, okay, that would be another diagnosis, okay, PTSD. All right. You're co-occurring. You have mental illness and
an addiction or substance use disorder.
Whatever. But isn't isn't addiction a mental health issue anyway, which I believe it is?
Yeah, so this is kind of something that
But see, what happens, Chris, is it confuses the issue, I think. And clinically now, mm-hmm. clinically, when, you know, I remember in the 90s, you might remember this and you might. What was happening was people were getting 28 days period on their insurance to go to treatment. That was it. So that was running out. The well was running dry. So they had to do something to be able to cover people who wanted substance abuse treatment. So they would add a depression diagnosis, you know, an Axis 1 or 2. So with all that stuff, okay, and, you know, how do you guys, and this is a question for both of you, how do you confront that with as little confusion as possible? Because, you know, you talk about, we were just talking about smart recovery and all that. How about this other stuff? Because what that says to me, and thinking about it and not knowing a lot about your program, but you guys told me what you told me tonight. All right, now what? What do we do? Okay, I'm good over here, but I have this. I want to hang myself because I'm depressed, but I'm not using. You see what I'm saying? How does that, like, can you address them issues is what I'm asking.
I think that it's essential to address them together.
Okay, now you would still use the same techniques that you do on that also, or is that like a mental health issue altogether, like a separate?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I talk and I say addiction and what I'm putting in quotes, air quotes, right, mental health are basically different sides of the same coin.
Right? I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, somehow we have this this strange dichotomy of, well, that's, you know, that's a chemical dependency issue and this is a biologically based mental illness, and somehow we separate them. And I think that hasn't done that's done a disservice, where they are all chronic health issues. It's a brain disease, right? They are disorders or diseases of the brain.
If somebody just comes off 150 milligrams of methadone, I don't care if it's Godzilla, he's going to be depressed.
That's what I was just going to say.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not
like losing your best friend.
Yeah, I mean,
how do you correctly diagnose someone who's coming on or off drugs?
Yeah,
like,
so
you know, that's going to take the high and the lows of your brain to different levels.
So you could not diagnose somebody with a air exactly. quotes again mental okay. health issue until that we'll call it a drying out period,
okay.
until right. the biological biology has kind of reached a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you but think about ripples in the pond until the ripples right. have kind of died out.
But here we're talking about prevention, so.
And we're talking about everything. We're talking right. from prevention
well,
to active treatment to
yeah.
recovery.
Well, I'm interested in the prevention part of it.
Yeah.
Only because so our kids don't get started in the first place. Because
right.
I believe that once they're into it, the disease, if they have it,
mm-hmm.
it's going to kill them. Or they'll be in and out of treatment 10 times. Or
yeah.
all that stuff. So it goes, you know, it's like a snowball effect. So the prevention, I give you guys a lot of credit because the prevention part is the toughest part.
Yeah, being proactive.
Yeah. Yes. But how do you...
And trying to influence someone in the beginning, you know what I mean, of their life, when they're getting ready to start their life as an adult and, you know, be responsible, have a job and career and kids and, you know what I mean, and all that. So.
It would be a perfect world if everybody that came to your school knew about a problem and asked for help, and then they would get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or even
but it doesn't happen.
Problem
like
and
right.
be willing to receive the help.
So, if you attend the college in New Jersey and you needed the services of your department, how would they get in touch with you?
So they could call me directly. Let's see if I can remember my phone number. 609-771-2134. So. Unfortunately, the services that we offer are only offered to TCNJ students. So
correct.
If you're a TCNJ
gotcha.
Student, please call me. We'd love to talk and try to help out however we can and support you and whatever you need. or you could email me at crc@tcnj.edu.
We will share this information.
Yeah, we'll put it.
And going back to Google, you could Google it. Yeah. And we'll pop up somehow.
Speaking of Google, I know you wanted to say something, Joe. Go
ahead. Anytime they can just track us down on our website, whether you type in alcohol or recovery or a name, it'll be easy. And I just want to say a lot of what we talked about is complicated. We don't know all the answers. Even some of the PhDs that would answer some more detail. But what I do is a lot of times is break it down simple. So I ask them, you know, why do people drink or drug? And it really boils down to three reasons: to have fun, either avoid or deal with pain, or perceive benefits. So for hurting, we sometimes, as we call it in our field, self-medicate. Perceived benefit, if you're an athlete or you might take steroids if you want to, quote unquote, study longer. But the other one, I remind them is the addiction part. But if they can break it down and look at that, so how can you have fun? How can you? How are you dealing with pain or problems? And I say, like a breakup. Who hasn't had a breakup where that song comes on 2 days later that just sends chills through your body?
Right.
I mean, that's not easy, right? That's real. So we try and get them to identify in their groups and in their floors and in their teams that they can maybe help those people through that. You know, and luckily we have a lot of great colleagues that help us with some of the heavier topics that you talked about. We have counselors that will talk, and we'll have clinical sessions where we can manage, like, here's what's going on. And that's where it gets time-consuming. But it's hard to decipher through what you see and don't see, or what they tell you that you know by their body is not true. They can track us down. Any college student, and I do need to let folks know that Rutgers Recovery House, Lisa Lateman, has been very supportive to us in trying to get this program going. So Rutgers also has a major, nationally known, successful program. And we are a college community that we help each other. In other words, my peers, we help each other. Like, right. What are you doing? How do you deal with that?
Gotcha. I love that. What time is it? Time for the word of the week.
Is this part of the curriculum, or is this just an additional service? Can the students elect this as an elective and be part of their...
It's not a class, but they do have to search out a little bit, or they have to hear us. Like, sometimes people...
Okay, I just didn't... You know.
Sometimes people do hear my message, but they'll tell you they didn't or whatever.
Listening's an art.
Yeah.
Well, do you offer it as a service?
Yeah, so these services
have to be sought out, Joe just said. They have to go looking.
Well, we have trainings and we have works. We have, like I said, the online program. Every first-year student gets a piece right there. Every parent for over 10 years has got a letter from me that says, we care, but we also know, just like anywhere, there's challenges that will face our students.
So is there like an orientation? Yep. You're part of that orientation, yep. So they know your services are available right at the beginning.
We have, matter of fact, one of the most dynamic people that you might want to talk to comes in and presents. He lives in Princeton now, and Matt Bellis. And he's the most dynamic person in the field, but he more talks about how to live a sober and healthy life without alcohol. But he does it in such a dynamic way. He engages people. You know, he tells his family story. He's dynamic. So that's one way we do it, besides our website, besides our technology. So we do it in so many different ways because a lot of times not so many people are wanting that yet. You know, and let's say, you know.
Well, for riding peers out. You know, this one needs help.
Right? Yeah. Right. And I don't know how you feel about this, but for some people, alcohol and some – situations has been a great time, you know, that it hasn't been an issue. I mean, for a lot of people, they can have a glass of wine, and how do they separate it? And that's what students say to me. Then I usually ask them, how many times did you have a glass of wine?
That's the difference between the new generation and the old generation is we didn't have any tolerance. We were like, until we fell off the chair.
Yeah.
You were asking about, you know, how do people access it? And one of the things that I think is absolutely amazing is that these services do not cost students anything extra. So it's if you're a college student and you're paying tuition, this is for you. So you know, there's no extra cost to live in Lion's House. It costs the same as living in any other dormitory.
Oh, nice.
So it's really pretty awesome.
Recovery dormitory.
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, we kind of
come up with the name, the Lion's House.
Well, so
that
Lion is
Lion,
our
L-I or L-Y?
L-I. Yeah. So it's our school mascot.
Okay.
And, you know, we were talking about the imagery that that invokes and the imagery of recovery takes courage.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we really want to emphasize and praise that courage.
I love that.
Nice.
You know, one of our I'll call it our tagline is that we say a history of addiction does not need to define you, but with recovery, you can go on to do great things. You know, it really kind of irks me when people sell, and I'm putting again air quote addicts, sell them short and say, you know, well, you can't really accomplish anything in life. But there are people who have a history of addiction who are senators, with Patrick Kennedy, right?
Right.
We had a president who had a history of addiction, didn't we? We have...
Well, he had other issues.
Well,
we have our Mercer County executive.
Right? We have doctors. We have lawyers. We have...
celebrities.
We have
a lot of
journalists, right? We have counselors. So, like, you know, we don't... This whole idea that we don't want to sell anybody short and that people can really go on to do great things. And recovery makes it all possible. And when you come to TCNJ, we want to support that recovery so that you can achieve your dreams.
And just a bigger message or a different message, not a bigger message, is though I think it would be great, and I know it might be putting outsiders who are listening on the spot, but not everybody's willing to share their history. And the more that people know, this is where I'm at, this is where I've been, especially if they're in different roles, that can mean a lot to people. You know, in other words, here we're very open, but I'm saying in right. general society and places and workplaces, not everybody is sharing.
Rather than
of course.
You know.
Yeah, a lot of information here tonight, man.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
You guys got my wheels turning.
What time is it? What time is it, Artie?
8:42.
On for the word of the week.
We do a segment.
It's something we come up with, you know. They're
Ken's
always
responsible.
They like to see how I work under pressure.
Okay.
So I do have a word
Googles
of the week.
It.
So.
You have it that fast. You pre-researched. Yeah. I don't want to hear it.
Well, no. I picked the word of the week at 7:25 this evening, when I was sitting here in this chair.
While you were talking to me.
Well, I was kind of listening, you know.
You probably gave it to
John. But no, the word of the week I picked out was content. Okay, so a state of peaceful happiness. So I've certainly found that within myself, and it's been a 40-year-old story to find that, because when I first came to a program or in a rehab, I graduated. They told me I would go home and live a normal life, actually. And that was 1979. Spent 17 months there.
Wow.
And they actually said that I didn't have a problem after I graduated. So I'm thinking I could drink on the weekends. I could do this. I could do that. Never really understood.
How'd that work
disease.
Out for you?
It didn't work out too well.
Okay, some big things coming up on the show.
Yep.
Artie will not be here for a couple of weeks. He has a well-deserved vacation coming up. And our lovely staff member there, Stacy.
Staff member?
Yeah, whatever. You got to find a name for yourself. We'll give you one.
Yeah, just come up with it. That's all.
Yeah,
we'll sign off on anything.
I'm boss, okay?
Boss, okay.
Yeah.
Dig it.
Yeah.
Right, no problem. Clocking it. That's boss.
I wasn't
like
thinking of that word.
What does boss stand for?
No, I don't want to say.
Good, so can't say it on here?
No.
Okay.
No, but this was really great.
I'm telling you.
I caught the vibe. I didn't know in the beginning, to be honest. I really didn't know how it was going to develop. I mean, you know, to tell you the truth. Not that we ever know. I mean,
from a standpoint and not recovery, like something you guys are trying, it's at first, but again, it's the mustard seed that you're, you know, people will think about it. Even if it's introduced early on, like I said, when I first got clean and I was told I could never drink or drug again, I immediately thought, like, what happens when I go to college? You know, but that's not. Again, like, I don't know if it's harder to reach the people that are in recovery or going through recovery in college. Obviously, the people that are going through it. And again, it's, I commend you because they're young. How do you tell a 20, 21-year-old, you know, hey, I think there's a problem. But I think what you do is amazing. I think every college should promote it a lot more. A lot more. And the stigma will go down if more people, like I said, I'm sure people in the program reach out to others and like, like I said, attraction rather than promotion. I think you should have like a sister or brother program.
It's
like,
big need for it.
No matter what. Again, thank you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being on the show.
And again, find them on the web, adep.tcnj.edu.
That's too many letters. All right, come on. It's been a long day. But thank you, guys. It was a pleasure having you on the show. And what being on here now does for you guys. All right, what's it do for them?
It's going to give a little exposure. Hopefully, they'll have some students listen. Hopefully,
not that.
Plus the anniversary.
And we appreciate that. We appreciate that.
You get to come back.
We're having our year anniversary.
We would love to come back.
Because this is such a new program, it would be great to have them come back. And you know what I mean? Kind of tell us how things are going.
We would love it to come
just
back.
Just so our listeners know, and you guys, anybody that we're having an annual show on, what's that date?
Our anniversary show,
May 16th.
All the guests that we've ever
had.
You
told me the 15th, but that's a Sunday.
They're going to come back.
No,
we're going to have a two-hour show.
It's now. It's the
what is it?
Wait a minute. It's the 16th of May.
Monday night.
Yeah, because I said 15th last week.
We talked about the 15th.
If that's doable, we'd love to have you guys back.
I put it in my phone.
We're going to have food. Of course, our listeners don't get any of that, but they get all the...
maybe in the meantime, we can kind of network a little bit. Kind of get to know you guys a little bit better.
Yeah, very familiar to me.
That sounds great.
Do I owe you money?
Maybe. Do I owe you money?
No.
Yes, you do.
We'll collect it on the way out. Give it to our...
But yeah, please, I mean, if you're a TCNJ student and you are in recovery or you're even having concerns about your substance use, please contact us because we want to help you. And if you are looking to go to college and you want to go to college in a supportive environment, please consider TCNJ. We want to be there for you as well.
Right.
Awesome. Okay.
Thank you.
Time goes by when you have a good show, and I want to thank Chris and Joe for being on the show tonight. It was a great show. I want to thank my co-host, as always, and these two lovely people over here, Stacy, the newest acquisition, or if you might, whatever word. I don't know what word. If you have any questions, comments, want to be on the show, you could email me at john@treatmentready.com, or you can go on our website.
You can go on the website.
Which is?
Listen to ocoaradio.com.
Well, let's.
You can also listen to all the shows that we've had in the past on demand.
Yeah, you can go on demand.
This one.
Yeah, including this one. Artie usually lets us hear it before we leave. So, yeah. Thanks again, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks. Down the day.